Welcome to the Writer's Well podcast, conversations about writing from craft to wellness with Rachel Herron and Jay Thorne. Hello, Rachel.
Hello, Jay. How are you?
You're all smiley today.
That's weird. My wife accused me of that last night too.
Yeah.
She's like, why are you so smiley? And I said, aren't I always? She's like, no. I don't know. I've been fighting a headache for 4 days. So maybe.
Not a migraine?
It was a migraine for 2 days, and now it's just like a knitting needle behind the eye. So maybe I'm just happy that I'm upright. And
yeah.
Well, you know why I'm smiling? I'm smiling because I'm doing the work. Like, if you could see my desk right now, I cleaned my entire office after I finished the book last week. I haven't talked to you since then, but I did finish my thriller last week, right on time.
On deadline.
And then I took right on deadline. And then I took a day to clean the office, which is like after a deadline, it just goes crazy. So I did that. And now I'm back into revision today. I took a couple days off and now I'm back into revision today. And I've got, all my post-its and my sentence outline and everything I love about revision spread out around me. So of course I'm smiling. Like, this is the best time of my life. And unfortunately, like, revision goes so much faster for me than actual writing. I will love to be in revision for the next 6 months, but I cannot be. So, but I'm happy. How about you?
It's good, good. I'm okay. I'm still in a lot of pain. My knees are still really sore. And I've gotten our good mutual friend, Sully, gave me some great tips on using a foam roller and doing some stretching exercises because there's no doctor's visits anytime in the near future. You know, if anything happens to you, unfortunately, you're pretty much on your own unless it's an emergency. So
I was in the kitchen slicing tomatoes the other night and I was like, I told Lala, I said, I'm really being careful not to cut myself. She's like, and you aren't always. And I really am not always, but right now I do not want to go to an emergency room.
Exactly.
I want to take resources from somebody who actually needs them.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's a weird time,
Fucking weird time.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I'm glad to see you. I'm glad to have friends. I'm glad to be back on Zoom. I have to tell you that introverted me got way overwhelmed last week.
Yeah.
Really overwhelmed. I led these two joy meetings. I don't know if you saw that in my email, but I invited people to meet with me and talk about the joys that they're finding in this time and not ignoring all the bad stuff. We had a place to say all the stuff we're scared of, but then we talked about joy and I talked to my readers. I sent an email to my readers list and there were probably, I think maybe 20 people in that group, including my dad. So that was fun. that was a surprise. Hi, Dad. Maybe 25 in there. But the writers group, which I led right after it, had a couple hundred. And it was phenomenal and beautiful. And everyone should be on my writer's list, rachelherron.com/write. And because we're going to do it again. But I tell you what, it laid me flat. Like that was managing that much energy, really, and fighting a headache at the same time. It laid me out. And I was like, I'm not doing Zoom for a whole weekend. I canceled like three friend Zooms because I couldn't bear it. How about you? How are you standing up to all the Zooming?
It's not that much different from what I normally do. You know, so that's good. You know, there's a few things on the horizon that are going to change the way I do things, but I'm also like, I'm so opportunistic right now. Like I'm almost feel guilty saying that sometimes because I know a lot of people are suffering and I don't want to minimize that, but I just can't, like, I can't go there. I just can't live there. I have to be opportunistic. And one of the ways is, I'm trying a lot of new stuff. I'm experimenting with a lot of things. And one of the things that Zach and I experimented with this past Sunday, which was a blast, was we had a Netflix party. Do you know what a Netflix party is?
I have no idea. I saw you saying that, but then I didn't actually read the email because I'm behind an email. I'll probably read it tomorrow. I know it's in my email inbox. Yeah. So what is a Netflix party?
So it's there's a free Chrome extension called Netflix Party. And if you install it, what it allows you to do is one person becomes the host. And they pull up the show on Netflix, and whenever they hit play or pause, it syncs everybody else's, and you get a little chat window on the side, so you're all watching it.
Sisters.
Oh my God, it was great! Yeah, you everyone watches it together, and then you have the chat window on the side, and We did one just for fun. One of our favorite episodes of The Office is Dinner Party. I don't know if you remember that episode.
American or UK?
The US one.
Oh, see, I've only ever seen the UK. I've never seen the US. Okay.
Well, it's probably the most cringeworthy episode, and it's hilarious. And so we decided we were going to do it, and there were a few people who had technical issues getting in, but for the most part, everyone was in, and as it's playing on my computer, it's playing at the same point on everyone else's, and we're all chatting about it and dropping lines in and making jokes. And
dude, that is the best.
It was so much fun.
Oh, my sisters and I did that this weekend. We watched Portrait of a Lady on Fire, which was gorgeous. French. And my sister made us all start it at the same time. I think it was on Hulu. And then we had a Zoom afterwards. I don't get out of Zooms with my sisters. And that was really nice. But we were texting the whole time. And yeah. I found I would love to do it right in there. So one more question. Technical question. Do they have to have a Netflix account that they're paying into?
They do. Or
so they need to be logged into Netflix.
They have to be logged in, right? So they can get a free trial. Like if it was the first time they did it, you know. I think it doesn't necessarily, I don't think the extension necessarily works overseas. So we had someone in Korea who couldn't participate. So there's little things here.
Tunnel Bear or something to get into the US on that or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's so fascinating. I love that.
Minor things. But you know what was also nice about it is it didn't, it felt much more relaxed because with Zoom you're on. You know, and this was just sitting at the keyboard watching and typing.
Nobody's
in real
watching
time.
Your face. You're typing. Yeah. You're chatting.
Yeah.
So, are you going to do it again with your groups?
Yeah, definitely. People loved it. And what we were thinking about doing is doing a real time story analysis.
You should totally do that.
Watch a movie, and then as it's running, being filling out a document, a shared Google Doc, and. So I think we're going to get there, but the first one, we're let's just have fun with this and see how it works. And it was a lot of fun.
Crazy cool. And I want to come on along on the next one. I don't care about the story analysis. I just want to hang out and watch something fun with you guys.
Yeah. We intentionally picked something silly and fun, and, we got enough heaviness right now. Let's just watch something
That's
fun.
What we need. Exactly. Yeah. We've been watching Schitt's Creek, which is the best.
Yeah.
For lightness. It's absolutely the best. So yay. Okay. So business wise, exciting news that we have a new, actually not new, Rainbow Warrior, whose name I believe is Aaron. If that's okay to say, I will not give your whole email, Aaron, edited their pledge up to the $10 level. And that means that they're in our Slack. So
yeah, nice.
I invited Aaron and, Jay, I just sent a message out on Slack. We have a bunch of people in our Slack channel, and I feel like we're not utilizing it as much as we can, especially right now when people do need a little bit more help. So I sent out an email to everybody saying, what do you want in this Slack? What could we be doing even better for you? So if anybody else wants to come in at that level, it's super awesome. And you can always find us at The Writer's Well. No, that's wrong. Patreon.com/The Writer's Well. And thank you, Aaron. And thank you to everybody who is continuing to support us.
Thank you.
A whole lot.
Super cool. All right. Yeah. So last week's episode, excuse me, episode 168, Do You Pray? That was a doozy of a question. I was fully anticipating a little less engagement on this question.
I was worried that we might get some hostility or some arguing. And I just want to point out that our community is a freaking amazing, and everybody just was able to talk about what they believe and feel, and it was beautiful, just like normal, you know, in our community. Yeah, I loved it.
You know what? It was one of the, it's another example of how we can live in a world where people can have differing opinions and still respect each other. And that's so missing on the internet these days.
Yes.
You have to be hardcore one side or the other, and you can't waver. And, here in this conversation, we had everyone from pure atheists to hardcore Christians. And it was a very nice conversation, comments. There was no judgment involved. It was great.
Yeah. Okay.
Christopher jumps in there first. And shout out to Christopher for sending me some stretches to do. I do appreciate
that.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah, he was given a Bible as a soldier. So I thought that was kind of funny.
A Bible to use in the life raft.
Yeah, in the raft, right. SJ said she doesn't pray because she's an atheist, but she does, she is mindful. And I think that's, you know, that's a very consistent thing that we heard about whether you were, you know, praying or not, just being mindful.
Yeah.
Anne Marie, you know, does it with yoga and meditation, she said in her comment.
And also she's using a Bible under her computer screen to lift it to the right height for her. That made me really laugh.
Yep. Becky had a really interesting observation. And this was definitely something I can relate to. She talked about like people meant really well. Like they meant well when they were talking to her when her mother was dying. But she said she dislikes it when people say they're praying for her, and she hated it when her parents were dying.
Yeah.
Because she doesn't believe in an afterlife, and it was just difficult for her. And I think sometimes there is an assumption that we can say things to people very well-meaning, but like that they think the same way we do. And it's just a good reminder that even though you mean well, sometimes it's not the best thing to do.
Yeah, I really, really appreciated hearing that. And I and she brought up the no atheists in foxholes. And I said that I don't believe in the phrase. I believe that a lot of people say that and think it's a thing, but there does not have to be spiritual revelation when you are in the worst point of your life. Sometimes it's just the fucking worst point of your life.
Yes.
And Becky, I apologize if I made that unclear. And I really appreciate your comment, especially how she's Jewish atheist. And she says that's also 100% what Judaism calls for in a situation like this, that the absolute core of the religion is respect for life. And that means staying home to protect our own lives. It's not particularly a contradiction. And I thought that was beautiful.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Yeah, definitely. And I told her too, like, this doesn't so much happen in Ohio as it did in Tennessee, but it would be very common for people to tell me to have a blessed day. And again, it's very well-meaning, and I wasn't going to be like a dick about it, but I wouldn't walk around telling people like, may Zeus crown you king of Olympus. Like, you know, it's kind of, like
I think you should.
Maybe I should start that, you know?
But would they actually say blessed day?
Blessed or blessed. Yeah.
I get in this corner of Oakland, in East Oakland, I get a lot of blessed days.
Yeah.
A lot of. Yeah. And for some reason, when an old person tells me, I really like it. When an old lady tells me to have a blessed day, I was just like, oh, well, you too. And when like a young man on the street says it to me, no.
Yeah, so just an observation. Edwin is a devout Christian, so prayer is a big key to his life, and he said it's situational. So I appreciated his honesty there in saying that, you know, sometimes he doesn't know what he's praying for, sometimes it doesn't feel great. So that honesty was really nice to hear from Edwin there. Kim says no prayers, but she believes in universal energy. Terry, much like Edwin, is a devoted Christian, so he believes in the power of praying. And Jenny said, no praying for me, but I understand other people's need for feeling they're making a difference, doing something, influencing something when they are actually helpless.
That's a really good point. Yeah.
Yeah.
Beautiful comments,
yeah,
people.
Yeah. Great
Beautiful.
Stuff. Great stuff. Yeah. Again, just it's so nice to be able to have an intelligent discourse with people and not worry about being, pegged on a particular side or pitted against each other.
Speaking of important discussions had respectfully, did you cut your hair?
No. I cut my beard.
Well, I know you cut your beard, but right now the way you are in the picture, which people could see you, it looks like your hair is hitting you right here. Is it just over your shoulders?
Yeah, it's just over my shoulders, and it's dark in my room.
It looks like you got like this cute bob. And if I was spacing out at the very beginning when we started to talk about the comments, it's because I was staring at you like, do you have like a little flip? Okay. Calm down now. I've been waiting that whole time to ask you that.
Yeah, I've had that before, so you shouldn't be surprised if you ever see that.
And I wouldn't be. No. All right. Well, you have a question for me today.
I do have a question for you.
Oh, and gosh, I know it's not hard.
It is, it's both timely and not timely. It's both relevant and irrelevant. It's all going to depend on how you answer it.
What does blue mean?
Yeah. And it's so open-ended. I haven't even thought about how I'm going to answer it yet. So I'm going to just play off of you. I'm going to see how you answer it. Here's the question. How has adversity changed your approach to writing?
Love this. How has adversity changed my approach to writing? Adversity pretty much always, and I know that I have a problem with saying always and never too much. I know that that is something that I'm working on. But in this point, just on a quick glance through my brain, I feel like I always get more stubborn in adversity. Whatever it is that is making anything that is important to me difficult, and in this case, while we're talking, I am considering the writing. If something makes it more difficult, I tend to put my head down and run against the wall, which is not always the best thing to do. And I believe actually that would explain a lot about my migraines, is that I'm always trying to go through walls with my head. And there's something to that, honestly. You know, I've talked about this before, but when I'm pushing too hard and in the wrong places and beating my head against these walls, it does tend to be when migraines take me down. It's like somebody hitting me with a hammer and then I just fall down. I won't fall down until something makes me fall down. So I think that adversity, I would love it if adversity could teach me some better lessons rather than just making me more stubborn. In the past few years, I will say that adversity has made me necessarily rethink things from different angles. Like for example, when Lala lost her job after I had quit my job, shortly thereafter, I remember thinking that I'll just work harder. And I remember that not working because we were also dealing with her mom dying and all at the same time. And I wasn't able to work harder the way I wanted to. And I remember sending an email to my editor saying, I need an extension. I can't do this. And I remember feeling like such a failure. And that was awful. And I remember the migraine I got over it. Actually, I was in Idaho. And, but then it made me lie there kind of at the bottom thinking, okay, how else can I come at this? I need another softer, gentler way to do my work. So, I think generally adversity makes me work too hard. Something corrects me, normally my head. And then I give myself forgiveness for being human. And I really feel like that is what's been happening with the pandemic, is that I've been working really hard because I'm on deadline. And so I have to, and that's great. But when I got the headache last week, I remember just being so bitter and so angry at myself that I'm not strong enough, that I, you know, couldn't push it off, that I needed to go to bed. And it took me 12 hours of cursing at myself to realize, oh, you know what? We're all just trying to get through. You're doing a great job. I believe that 95% of us are, or more, are doing the best we can with what we have. I believe that to be true most of the time. And it's true for me too. I don't need to beat myself up. I'm a very good beater upper of myself, and that provides enough adversity on its own. I don't need to add to a global pandemic by telling myself I'm not working hard enough and I'm not good enough. So I think that's why in my books, all my characters are always struggling with feeling not worthy or not good enough yet. If I just give a little bit more of a push, I'll finally be the person I want to be. And adversity, especially recently in the last year or so, and now, is teaching me over and over again that I am just right, just the way I am. Whether that is with a migraine, whether that is making a deadline or not making a deadline, whether that is eating the right food or the wrong food, whatever that means. I'm actually trying to push those terms away. I'm just right and completely whole and a good human being, just the way I am. So I guess adversity makes me learn that eventually, and it usually takes me a lot longer than it took me right now to wander to that realization. Well,
have you always had this feeling that what you're doing isn't enough?
Always. And I finally realized what it stems from. Have we talked about scrupulosity on this show?
Yeah, we talked a little bit about last week, I think.
I thought we did. So I've only recently in the last like 6 months been putting that together, is that the scrupulosity as a child, that's where my guilt comes from. I always used to kid around like, you know, I wasn't raised Catholic. Why am I so guilty about everything? But if I like don't salute the hostess at the restaurant the right warm way, I can beat myself up for it the rest of the day as being guilty and a bad person. And so it's been a lifelong struggle to let that go. But adversity will still trigger it, I guess. Adversity makes me feel like a bad person because I'm not living up to everything I want to live up to. And the other day when I spent an entire day in bed, I felt I was a bad person, but I know enough about myself now to say, no, you're a human person. You're not a bad person. You're a human person going through human things, and the whole world is struggling right now. Give yourself a break if you need to lie in bed for a day.
Yeah.
You know, and read books. And then I really did reframe it, and I thought, wow, this used to be my favorite thing as a child,
yeah,
just to lie in bed sick, air quotes around sick. I was so good at faking sick, and read all day. So I read all day on Friday, and it was beautiful. And I gave myself that grace, but adversity kind of pushes me there, I guess.
Yeah.
Does that kind of answer the question?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. How about you?
Yeah. I mean, we're in adversity now, but we all face adversity all the time. And
let's acknowledge that there will be people listening who are in great, more adversity than we are, like somebody that they love is going through cancer and also dealing with the pandemic,
yep,
you know, that kind of thing. So sorry, yeah, to interrupt. Go on.
No, it's fine. It's fine. I think my approach to writing, and if I think of writing more like business than just writing, because we all know, you know, well,
it's
synonymous, right? We have to,
it's completely,
it's the same thing. So I think what I've, what adversity has taught me is that I'm never the same person, and that's okay. You know, like,
oh, that's interesting. Tell me more about
well,
that.
Well, I'm not the same person I was 20 years ago. That's obvious, but I'm not the same person I was 10 days ago. And I think, like,
yeah,
you know, it doesn't mean that you're manic or you're constantly chasing shiny objects or flitting from one thing to the next, but every adverse situation creates a different version of you. And I think over time, what has happened, especially being a self-employed small business owner, an independent writer, is that growth is accelerated or it's emphasized in a way that you don't get. So like, here's an example. Like when I had a salaried job, if there was adversity, I would, my response would be like, okay, or like shit. Okay. And then I would just sort of be victim to whatever the circumstance was. Right. Cause I didn't feel like I had any power, any ability to change that. And now even up until a few weeks ago, now my response is like, okay, now what? Like, okay, that thing that I used to do isn't going to work anymore. So now what? I'm drastically oversimplifying a period of 10 to 15 years of my life with a lot of adversity and a lot of head butting up against the wall to get to that point. But I think that's what adversity has done for me. So even now, you know, I'm in no better situation than anybody else. Like I don't have a golden nest egg. I don't have a trust fund. You know, I'm the typical American. I have a couple thousand dollars for an emergency. That's about it. Like,
honestly, that's not typical. The typical American
doesn't
have
$400.
Yeah. $400.
Yeah.
Yeah. So good on you.
Yeah. So like, I guess what that means for me is like, I'm not being self-delusional, or I don't have any type of insurance policy that anyone else doesn't have. I'm just like, okay, well, what are my options? Like, I can sit and like wallow and watch Netflix and hope the government, quote unquote government, bails me out in some way, or I can, every day I can get up and go, okay, now what? Like, and so I think for what, like, if I bring it down to the extreme level, like there are on a weekly basis now, I'm reevaluating projects, ongoing projects, things that have been in the works for months, things in the works for years, things that in the future were just assumed and now are not, things that involve Zach, things that involve don't involve Zach. Like all of that, I'm trying now to be very objective about it and go, okay, now what? And if those things fit the world that we're moving towards, then I'll consider it. And if they don't, like, you got to bury them.
And to be honest, let's, you know, like, let's name what you're talking about. The world for authors looks different right now because of global economics changing, and we don't know how they're going to change. But all I have to say to you is that I am super freaking glad that I am not a fully traditionally published author.
Yeah, with one single revenue stream, which is your publisher. Yeah,
exactly. And if they don't take the next book, or if the next book doesn't sell because it comes out at the wrong time or it's not the right topic, like that would put me into a panic. And I'm really grateful that you and I are in the place that we are, where we can reevaluate our business choices all the time. And you and I both, we won't say much about it, but we both came to each other last week off air, and we both had very similar ideas that we might choose to work on as a new project. And we get to lie in bed with headaches or without headaches and kind of brainstorm those things. So being a writer entrepreneur, whether you're doing that full-time or you're doing that part-time on the side of another job, is really such a blessing to have. And it's not a blessing. It's not a blessing that was just given it to us. It was a blessing that we went out and, like, you know, took down with a machete. So,
yeah, I mean, without getting into too many details, you and I are both educators who value real life experiences for our students. And guess what? That's never going to be the same. Like, it doesn't mean that people are never going to get together again, but all the whole model that you and I had 3 weeks ago doesn't exist anymore.
And we are not going on our retreats.
No. And like, we can't pretend, first of all, we can't pretend that, people are never going to come out in real life again. Of course they are. Yeah. On the other hand, we can't just pretend that in 2 months or 3 months or 4 months, everything's just going to snap back to normal. I think that's just as dangerous. So we're both in this situation where we've sort of planted our flag in the value of real life interaction, and in a time where people are running away from that.
Yes.
Literally running away from real life interaction.
Yeah. And there, I mean, I usually make 10,000 around that, you know, between 6 and 10,000 on my retreats during a year. That's, you know, that's gone. Yeah. And then we are, I guess that could be called adversity, but in my mind it is called, I really do, like, in this Pollyanna way, feel it as an adversity, and then I feel it as an opportunity.
Yeah.
Like, what is going to be the next exciting thing that we can do? Because you and I both really have huge open minds, and we're always willing to try something new, like a Netflix party.
Yep. And I think too, like our friend Joanna says, always, we're biased toward action. I think it's oversimplifying it, but if you're biased toward action, you're always going to be asking yourself, okay, now what? Like, what am I going to try now? And it's probably not going to work, but you're going to stumble.
But if you try enough things.
Yeah. The Pareto principle. Like, if you try 10, two of them are probably going to work out somewhat, but you're going to have to fail at 8 first.
Exactly. That, you know, the Japanese proverb, you know, fall down 6 times, get up 7.
Yep.
Or maybe it's fall down 7, get up 8. But that's what we do.
Yeah.
And I just want to say how grateful I am to you that you are my friend and partner through all of these things. And I could do this without you, absolutely, but I wouldn't want to.
Likewise.
And I love and adore you.
Likewise.
And I'm so glad you're in my life.
Yeah, I'm so glad we can come together and kind of talk about this stuff in what could be considered a really dark time and just find some light in there.
Yeah. And also, I want to point out to people that if you can't find the light, it's okay to go to bed. I'm serious. Find the dark under your, we all need time for recovery and mourning. There's, you know, we're all losing a life that a particular kind of way of life we're never going to have again. So there's
that's true.
There.
Yep. That's true. Or for a very long time. But I feel like this has forever changed us. Even if everything were to go back to normal in a month, we are all, every single one of us are, we're different people now.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Oh, good question.
Thank you.
Good question. You want to restate it again for the audience to come answer?
Yeah. Come on over to the comments and tell us, how has adversity changed your approach to writing?
Love that. And that's at thewriterswell.org. I am having success when I go to thewriterswell.org and then click on the episode and then refresh once, then I get the comments. I always have to refresh once.
Okay.
But it works.
So, all right. Well, our regulars have been regular. So I'm assuming as long as that's the case, then we're good.
Yep. Come on and talk to us. All right. Thank you, Jay.
Thank you. Bye.
Happy writing.